Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Boxing Source Radio Show here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, James Bell. I am the boxing analyst for the Cohort Truth on Sports, which you can either listen to my commentary on some of the shows for the Cohort Truth on Sports at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Tuesday nights here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel, or check out articles on the Cohort Truth on Sports website through the chconsports.com. The number to dial in to talk boxing here tonight is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on cue. You'll be able to talk live on the show. We have about an hour of live commentary over the sport of boxing and a little bit of overtime, as there is a lot of topics to cover here within the sport, as we've had a good number of fights that happened over the course of yesterday, and a good amount of news notes over the week concerning the sport, dealing with other specific fights. So we'll be covering all of that here tonight. Like I said, we had a few big fights here and there yesterday. Pretty much starting the day off early here stateside, as we had a pretty big card overseas there in England, dealing with the a unification fight that happened between Carl Frampton and Scott Quigg. And see that that particular fight seemed like it had a lot of build-up. Went up to the weigh-in, and a lot of people were there at the weigh-in. It was a pretty big scene out there for the weigh-in, and a lot of people were anticipating that fight, especially in the United Kingdom. And we pretty much got to this particular fight, and it seemed like it was basically a tale of two halves. As in the first half, it seemed like Scott Quigg was a little bit gun shy there in the first half of the fight, specifically in the first three rounds. Looked like he was pretty much trying to see what Carl Frampton was going to be doing in those first few rounds. And Frampton just took advantage of that to, you know, get off a little bit more, get off first, get a few key punches in here and there, and then basically have a big lead in that fight. I mean, I didn't see much coming out of Scott Quigg until pretty much the second half of the fight, specifically the seventh round on, for Scott Quigg to pick up the pace. And by that time, I would say it was a little bit too late for him to, you know, get himself either even with Carl Frampton or in the lead against Carl Frampton by the time the end of the fight happened. So I felt that Carl Frampton did win that fight. I kind of thought that Quigg would have done a little bit better out there. It just seemed like he was, you know, pretty much frozen for those first few rounds. It seemed like he was a little bit nervous going in there for those first few, especially with, you know, a big crowd out there, a lot of the fans there pretty much behind him, as it was in Lancashire area of the United Kingdom, and that's where Quigg is from. I thought that his, you know, amount of fights that he's had against the likes of, you know, Kiko Martinez and other fighters like that, and defending the WBA Super Bantamweight Championship as many times as he's had, that he would have been able to pull off the win on this particular fight. But it seemed like Pimpton just seemed to be more of the aggressive person there, and he was able to pull off the win against Scott Quigg. And so, you know, they basically had the split decision victory for Carl Frampton, although I thought it should have been a unanimous decision win. Felt that Frampton at the very least won 7 of those 12 rounds, probably 8. And so with Quigg getting one side of those things, the decision said that he basically got 7, pretty much at least 7 rounds within that fight, and I didn't see enough out of Scott Quigg to warn him having the majority of the rounds scored in his favor. So I would say that, you know, Frampton was able to get this key win. I'm not necessarily sure if both of those guys showed anything to really convince anyone that they were amongst the best within their weight class. It was basically something where, you know, they kind of, you know, felt themselves out for a good percentage of the fight. And then, like I said, pretty much around the second half, I think, you know, Frampton kind of like stepped it up a little bit while Quigg was just increasing his activity, but it didn't just seem like Quigg was very much, you know, very much of a big difference there. It was, like I said, with the decision that happened there, you had Frampton pretty much getting 8-4 on 2 of those scorecards, with Quigg getting 7 of the 12 rounds on the opposite side. And it just seemed like, I guess, they gave the last judge gave Quigg more of a favor within this fight, even though Frampton basically had most of the advantage in that fight, you know what I'm saying? So Frampton is there as the IBF champion. He gains the version of the WBA belt, as Scott Quigg held a version of the WBA belt since Guillermo Rigueno was a champion there for the WBA, but they now had called him a champion in recess, as they basically gave him that name there a little bit, I think it was before the end of 2015, as he was, inactive in defending that WBA belt for a while. But as a result, with him being the champion in Recess, Frampton's win basically shows that he will be ordered to face Rigondeaux by July 27th. Checking out the synopsis here through ESPN that Frampton Frampton will have to face Rigondeaux by July 27th. And so we'll see what, Frampton's going to be able to do here, if he's going to move on to face Guillermo Rigondeaux, or if he's going to be looking to fight someone else. I kind of doubt that Frampton will be right in there in line to face Rigondeaux, and I think that Rigondeaux will end up facing somebody else. Whether it's either through, promotional issues here and there, or, whatever. But I think Frampton has a good amount of options to face people, the exception of Guillermo Rigondeaux. If I look, towards these rankings that you had, you still have guys like Nenato Donaire out there with the WBO belt at super bantamweight. And you also have, I think it's another guy that holds a title there within that division. So when you see all of that there at super bantamweight, then you have the options that you have. We'll be going to, other things that have happened within the super bantamweight division, including another fight that was, pretty much in the same weight class as, like I said in previous weeks. We've had three of the four major belts in super bantamweight on the line yesterday. Like I said, you had Frampton and Quigg pretty much facing each other here over in England. And then as part of the undercard for the Santa Cruz Kiko Martinez fight, we have the WBC Super Bantamweight Championship on the line as Hugo Ruiz faced Julio Seja. And just real quick through that, Julio Seja basically scored the knockout win there against Julio Seja in pretty much one round to win the full version of the WBC Super Bantamweight Championship, as this version of the title was basically forfeited by Leo Santa Cruz, as Santa Cruz moved up a division to pretty much compete in the weight class of featherweight. So Santa Cruz, goes up to featherweight as he was formerly the super bantamweight champion, at least pretty much over a year ago, as he has been the super bantamweight champion, from, 2013 up to 2015, before he moved up, basically, around, I would say, May 2nd, to featherweight. But so that you know, basically forfeited the WBC version of the Super Bantamweight Championship, and so that was vacant. And so you had Hugo Ruiz going up against Julio Seja for that WBC Super Bantamweight Championship. And it looks like Julio Seja, who was up to that point, well on his way to winning that, because, I mean, in their first fight, this was their second fight. As their first fight, which was on August 29th, Seja was able to beat Ruiz through a technical knockout victory. But here in this next fight, he was not able to handle the blitz of Hugo Ruiz, and Hugo Ruiz was able to pretty much take him out within that first round to score the KO victory and win the WBC version of the Super Bantamweight Championship. So we'll be looking to see what's going to happen between either Seja and Ruiz, or see if Julio Seja is able to defend his WBC belt against the likes of Carl Frampton, who have, you know, the IBF championship and the current version of the WBA championship, or Nandito Donaire within that weight class. So, at least within one day, we've had a little bit of a clearance as to who's among the tops within the division of 122 pounds, with Frampton able to score a, you know, fairly, I would say a fairly convincing victory over Scott Quigg. I don't know where the judge has scored it 7-5 for Scott Quigg. I don't know where he found those 7 rounds, but it really didn't seem like he was able to pull off what he needed to pull off in order for him to get that victory. Just real quick, we're going to go into a break here on the Boxing Source Radio Show. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539 to get into the show. But we'll be back after this quick message.
Football talk like you've never heard it before. Possibly one of the funniest podcasts in sports today. That's right, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have Cali Mike, Chi-Town, Carcel Mathis, and the Mouth of the South, Tony Watley. They give you a different perspective of football that may not be found anywhere else. You may also catch the callers with some classic lines as well.
There's a blackout level.
What is it?
I don't know exactly what it is off the top of my head.
Okay, I know you're in front of your computer right now. Look it up.
I'm about to look it up right now, all right?
National blackout level.
I never said national blackout level, liar.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Yes,
no, I didn't.
Okay, Florida blackout level. Whatever blackout level you want to look up, look it up.
You can't compare a fifth-year quarterback to a 20-year quarterback. How do you compare Cam Newton to Peyton Manning? That's impossible.
I don't even think Cam Newton's going to get a contract extension.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the worst franchise in the National Football League. The worst franchise in the National Football League.
The difference between Jameis Winston, Matt Ryan, and Cam Newton is Jameis Winston will have the ability to lead a team to a championship.
Once again, people, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night on the MRN Broadcast Network.
Jameis Winston is just stupid.
All right, here, folks. We are back live on the Boxing Source Radio Show. The number to dial in is 347-237-5539 to talk boxing. Once again, 347-237-5539 to talk boxing and what has been happening over the course of the week in the sport. We basically covered in the last segment a quick synopsis of, you know, two fights that happened within the super bantamweight division that had multiple belts on the line, as you had Frampton and Quigg with the WBA and IBF versions of that super bantamweight championship on the line, and plus you had Julio Ceja and Hugo Ruiz fighting for the WBC version of the super bantamweight championship. So that kind of like ironed out a few things within that particular division. And then we're going to see how Guillermo Rigondeaux is going to be involved within that particular division himself, as he is, you know, the head version of the super bantamweight championship, while also holding WBO and WBA versions, but both of those have been vacated to a certain extent. He will be back in action on March 12th over in Liverpool, as he'll be facing James Diggins, who is 21-1. But afterwards, he is looking towards going after those guys there at the super bantamweight division, as you have Frampton. We got to see what happens with Quigg after this particular fight. You have Ceja out there with the belt, who, you know, just won it. And then you have Nonita Donaire with the version of the belt, but with Rigondeaux leaving Top Rank and signing with Roc Nation Sports, I doubt that there will be a second fight between Rigondeaux and Nonita Donaire anytime soon. So we'll be pretty much looking out there in the next couple of weeks on March 12th to see what happens here with Guillermo Rigondeaux. He's expected to go to 17-0 there against James Diggins. But going back to what happened over Saturday the 27th, as I did, like I said, go through a little bit with what happened over in England, and also touched on a bit with the Ceja Ruiz fight. We also had in the main event there in that particular day for Ceja Ruiz, he had Kiko Martinez going up against Leo Santa Cruz. And like I was mentioning before, Leo Santa Cruz was at super bantamweight but moved up to featherweight. And there he was able to go up against Kiko Martinez, who, you know, looked to be game for this fight against Santa Cruz, but Santa Cruz basically proved to be too much for Kiko Martinez, which I think many people expected. We know, Kiko Martinez has been in the ring against the likes of Frampton and with Quigg over the course of his career, and lost both of those fights. With Frampton, he actually fought Frampton twice and lost both of those fights. But also, you know, really fought, you know, other guys in different parts of the world there too. But he never really was a major champion at one point, other than that super bantamweight when he won the IBF super bantamweight championship back in 2013. But he lost it to Carl Frampton in their second fight. So while he has been a champion in one particular division, he really hasn't had something where he stepped up to fight high-profile competition and defeat those guys. So we kind of like expected this against Leo Santa Cruz, where he was able to go up there against Santa Cruz and eventually lose that fight by KO. So we were able to see, you know, what Santa Cruz was able to do there in the ring, but it was kind of like very expected out of Santa Cruz to be a guy that pretty much did not have the skill level of Santa Cruz, and we pretty much knew that from the opening bell. So, you know, Kiko Martinez just basically looked like the, you know, the smaller guy and just couldn't, you know, weather the barrage of Leo Santa Cruz. And it was just too much of an offensive display for Santa Cruz, and Martinez couldn't do anything to keep him away from him. So so we were able to witness Leo Santa Cruz get that victory there. So now, with that being known, you have Santa Cruz there as the super champion for the WBA, which is, you know, kind of interesting there because, you know, WBA is, you know, trying to iron a few things out there to try to get, like, one champion. And now they have this particular fight between Santa Cruz and Martinez, with Santa Cruz, you know, not being that far removed from super bantamweight, against Kiko Martinez, who was basically another guy that was at super bantamweight. So that really doesn't make much sense for the WBA to have this basically be a title fight, especially for their title of super champion. You have guys there that are at featherweight, such as the WBA regular champion, who is Jesus Andres Cuellar. You have Lee Selby, who's the IBF champion. You have Gary Russell Jr. out there as well. And the Vasyl Lomachenko. So it's kind of a pretty diverse division there with those guys holding these belts. It's interesting with Gary Russell Jr. out there, who won the WBC version of the featherweight championship back in March, but he has not had a fight since. So it's pretty interesting to have, you know, these guys that are holding championship belts but have not been able to defend those belts out there. So like I said, you have guys like the likes of Gary Russell Jr. You have like Lee Selby, who was able to have one defense of his IBF featherweight championship against Fernando Montiel back in October. So we have a few of these guys that are out there available to fight at featherweight, but have not really gotten these fights put together. So we got to see what's going on here within the featherweight division and to see if we could have something where you would have fights such as you know, Gary Russell Jr. versus Lee Selby, or Jesus Cuellar, who's, you know, rated fairly high in the featherweight division. But you don't see him getting much of these big fights there. I mean, Cuellar is out there at 28-1. He's only had that one loss that was, you know, early in his career, but he's, you know, won the version of the WBA featherweight championship, and he won it by KO victory over Victor Chinyan. So you would think that a rugged guy like Cuellar would be able to have an opportunity to get a fight with one of these guys out there in the featherweight division, but it's just not looking well so far with him. As doesn't seem like not much is there on the horizon, or I haven't really seen much in reference to that. So we need to see what's going on with Jesus Cuellar, if he has something in line here within the near future to, I guess, for him to have a defense of that regular version of the WBA featherweight championship, while you have Leo Santa Cruz being able to move up to featherweight and then get a version of the WBA featherweight championship that was basically, I guess it would be vacant there, but because just trying to see here, it looks like even Nicholas Walters was the super welterweight champ. I mean, not super welterweight, but super world featherweight champion with his win over Benito Dener back in 2014, and then was able to defend it. Well, not defend it, but was able to have a fight against Miguel Mariaga in June of 2015, when he basically was overweight for that fight, so he couldn't necessarily win that belt. So he had to move up to super featherweight against Jason Sosa. But we're seeing here in reference to Santa Cruz, if he's basically there at featherweight, we're not going to see him against the likes of those that have blown, like Guillermo Rigondeaux, Scott Quigg, Carl Frampton, Nadine Dener, Seha. So you still have guys like Gary Russell Jr. that's out there, Lee Selby, and also Lomachenko. But with Lomachenko, they're talking about a possibility of putting in a fight in April between Vasyl Lomachenko and the Axeman Nicholas Walters, which would be a very good fight for fight fans to look forward to. So we'll be getting a few updates here and there in reference to those particular fights happening within the sport. But in reference to Leo Santa Cruz, it's going to be interesting to see what they're going to be able to do with him, because, I mean, here against Kiko Martinez, it was a definite mismatch. Many people knew that he was going to win this fight and win this fight easily. So for that, you basically have to see what Santa Cruz is going to be doing next year for the near future. Just here, a brief reminder, a number to dial in to talk boxing here is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press one key to be on cue. You'll be able to talk live on the show. We're just moving on here as Like I said, we had a full day of fights, not, you know, just in the United Kingdom, but here in the States as well. Something about what went on in Anaheim, California, with Leo Santa Cruz and Kiko Martinez, plus Julio Teixeira against Hugo Ruiz. And now we move on to what happened here at Madison Square Garden yesterday. That was on HBO Boxing, as we had the main event of Terrence Crawford defending his WBO super lightweight championship against Henry Hammer and Hank Lundy. But before we get into that, we had a co-feature fight at lightweight below that with you know, a young prospect there, Felix Verdejo, going up against William Silva for the WBO Latin Lightweight Championship. So it was their fight at lightweight going on there with Felix Verdejo. And, you know, there's been a few guys keeping their eyes on Felix Verdejo as, you know, a young guy that's, you know, coming up in the ranks at lightweight. Up to this point, I mean, we've seen him in a couple of rankings there for the WBC, as he was, you know, placed at number 12 in the WBC. And for the WBA, he's actually at number 2, while for the IBF, he's there at number 7, and the WBO, he's at number 3. So he is pretty much on about within the rankings of these boxing organizations. And he had this fight against William Silva there at lightweight. And I was just seeing here, I was checking in. It seems like Silva was there ranked in the WBO at number 12. But not necessarily anywhere else in those rankings. So, so I'm just seeing it here. It just looks like they were going back and forth between those two. And you had Felix Verdejo. I think they kind of like had him as a clear favorite for this fight. Not sure, you know, what they were pretty much expecting from Verdejo. I think that William Silva, I guess, gave him a pretty much an unexpected challenge there in that ring. But they were able to, you know, go after each other for about 10, you know, for 10 rounds. So I think it was the length and the toughness of William Silva that was able to, you know, give a little bit of a frustration there for Felix Verdejo. You know, Felix Verdejo was, you know, nominated or pretty much named as a prospect of the year by ESPN.com. I said it was, you know, basically a shutout victory for Felix Verdejo. But they said you had William Silva just basically, you know, just taking the punches, but it wasn't like he was able to get a, you know, knockdown against William Silva. Verdejo wasn't able to get a knockdown against William Silva. So they were able to see that Verdejo was pretty much going to get a few of those rounds in and score the victory. But it looks like with this unanimous decision victory, he's pretty much able to move on as the WBO Latino lightweight champion, and it seems like they're trying to plan on putting him in a card sometime in the future. They have like a date targeted, which is April 16th. So they're trying to get that put together there for him to see if he'll get another fight in someplace around that date. So we'll be looking for Verdejo in another fight here within 6 weeks, which is pretty quick turnaround time. So he's probably going to be back in the gym probably this week or sometime next week to get ready for that next fight. So we'll be able to see what's going on with that. Once again, folks, you're listening to the Boxing Source Radio Show. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press one key. You'll be able to get on queue, and then you'll be able to talk live on the show. Now we're basically going to get to the main event of the fight card that happened at Madison Square Garden, when you have the WBO light, not the WBO light, I would say WBO light welterweight, but a lot of people say it's the super lightweight version of the WBO championship. As you have the undefeated Terrence Crawford going up against Henry Hank Lundy. Lundy, I was there as the number 10 rated contender for the WBO championship. And then he was able to just go up there against Terrence Crawford. Terrence Crawford, like I said, undefeated, defending the super lightweight championship for the second time in his career, as he had a TKO win against Thierry Jean back in October for its first defense. And I think a few eyes were on Terrence Crawford as we were seeing how he was going to come out there against Henry Lundy. As you know, back in October, some people were thinking that he was going to be there available for Manny Pacquiao. In April, for Manny Pacquiao's fight on April 9th in Las Vegas, but he chose to have another match with Timothy Bradley. So with that being known, he had to have Terrence Crawford have some type of fight out there, and apparently they chose Henry Hank Lundy. And seemed like the build-up to the fight was, you know, kind of getting a few eyes and ears towards this particular fight. I think that a lot of people kind of overlooked, you know, this fight and saying that it should have been basically would be an easy victory for Terrence Crawford, and it kind of was. Henry Lundy was, you know, able to get a couple of shots in, especially in the first round. He was able to get a, you know, good 1-2 combination in at the middle of the first round. Otherwise, he really didn't have anything to use against Terrence Crawford. Terrence Crawford was a longer fighter, taller fighter. He fought tall. He used his range. Lundy didn't seem like he was aggressive enough. He kind of like looked to be a counterpuncher, but be a counterpuncher in range, which really doesn't work for a guy of his size. I feel like he should have been much more of an aggressor, or much more, or tried to make the fight a little bit rough for Terrence Crawford, and he really didn't do it that much, and so
what happened was Crawford was able to open up against Henry Lundy and was able to catch him through his guard and was able to score, you know, that first knockdown in round five. And then after basically the count of 7 or 8, Lundy was able to get up and Crawford was able to continue the offense. And the referee just was able to step in and stop the fight there over by Hank Lundy's corner. So Terrence Crawford was able to score the TKO victory in round five to basically stay undefeated, keep his WBO version of that super lightweight championship, and move on. So, I mean, you have Terrence Crawford out there. He's, as many have said, he's one of the most talented fighters out there. You know, an exciting fighter, a fighter that, you know, a good number of fight fans can get behind. But it just doesn't seem like he's been getting a number of these high-profile fights that people are looking towards. You know, ever since his fight against his big win against Yuriorkis Gamboa, you know, they've kind of like matched him up against guys that have, you know, had fairly good records but haven't had the notoriety that some of these other guys have had. I mean, he's had another fight before Yuriorkis Gamboa where he fought Ricky Burns to win the WBO version of the lightweight championship. But that was, you know, back in early 2014, and then Yuriorkis Gamboa was the other fight in 2014. So we had three fights in 2014 that kind of like gave him a good amount of interest as he was able to have a good amount of momentum from those fights. But after that, you know, it's kind of like went back down. As, you know, it was a little bit before he was able to fight Thomas DeLorme back over there in Texas. And then after that, get a hometown fight against Gary John back in Omaha. So now he gets like a little bit of a bigger venue, so to speak, fighting there at Madison Square Garden, but in the theater area. So it was kind of a smaller crowd. I think it was said like about over 5,300. Well, actually, it was less than that, pretty much about 5,100 in the theater area for the and the Madison Square Garden. So I had about 5,000 fans there live, and then the HBO crowd being able to watch the fight, and some other networks around the world carrying the fight to see Terrence Crawford. To me, Terrence Crawford needs to have higher profile fights. After it happened, we kind of heard from Bob Arum, who is the promoter for Terrence Crawford, and saying that they may try to get him matched up against Ruslan Provodnikov for a later fight. And Ruslan Provodnikov is, you know, I would say like a name. It's a name there in the boxing world, as he's, you know, fought Timothy Bradley. He's fought Chris Algieri. He fought Lucas Matisse earlier last year.
But it seems like for many, they feel that Ruslan Provodnikov is on his way down in his career. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, he did, you know, lose to Timothy Bradley. And he didn't lose to Chris Algieri. I lost to Matisse, and, you know, back in 2011 also lost to Mauricio Herrera. But it's not like, you know, Provodnikov has been a valid guy out there. I mean, he's had the super lightweight championship at one point. But after he won it, he lost it. So he hadn't even defended this title once before losing it. So it's kind of weird that they wouldn't put Terence Crawford out there against the likes of Victor Postol, who's widely regarded as the number two guy in the division there at super lightweight, and that a lot of people are buying stock into, as Victor Postol was pretty much talked about from last year, as he was, you know, there waiting in the wings to be fighting for the WBC version of the super lightweight championship when Danny Garcia was the champion. But the team for Garcia basically gave step aside money on a couple of occasions. One in order to fight Lamont Peterson. The other, I guess it was either they were going to give him another set of step aside money or move up, and they basically moved up to vacate that version of the super lightweight championship. And so you had Postol versus Matisse for the vacant WBC super lightweight belt, and we all saw what Postol was able to do against Matisse to score that win. So now you have Crawford out there at pretty much number one in many rankings for super lightweight, and Postol at number two, but we're not necessarily sure where or when that fight is going to happen, as that's the most demanded fight out there. And Postol is pretty much out there waiting in the wings to fight someone, but they haven't gotten someone out there for him yet. So we see there with Terence Crawford that he might be pretty much out there waiting in the wings to get a big fight, but I'm not necessarily sure that a fight between him and Ruslan Provodnikov is big enough for many fight fans and casual fight fans to be interested in. So we're going to see what's going to happen next for Terence Crawford. It seems like with that synopsis there, we've kind of like covered mostly everything that happened over the course of February 27th, like I said, with Crawford being able to score his fifth round TKO victory, Santa Cruz being able to get a KO win over Kiko Martinez. You had Carl Frampton score the split decision win against Scott Quigg, even though I felt that it should have been a unanimous decision win, and Scott Quigg really didn't do much at all between rounds one and round six. So you have Carl Frampton there still undefeated as he's able to get two super bantamweight championships in the process. And then also you have Seja scoring the victory over Hugo Ruiz. There, in that particular card for Leo Santa Cruz and Kiko Martinez too. So, like I said, three super bantamweight championship belts were on the line yesterday, and like I said, and you had Terrence Crawford defend his super lightweight championship as well, and then the young former prospect there, Felix Verdejo, on score unanimous decision win over William Silva. So that basically covers what's happened over the course of last week, yesterday. With that being known, we still have a good amount of news that happened over the course of the week, as we've had one thing where we've had a big, kind of a big news story that happened early this week that brought a lot of disappointment to a good amount of sports fans, including myself, as I was looking forward to this particular bout happening. I really don't know how to get to this, but for those that have followed this show and for those that have called in, I've said for the longest time that one of the fights I was looking forward to in the welterweight division ever since May 2nd, 2015, or basically May 3rd, 2015 when I started this show, is a fight between Sean Porter and Keith Thurman. Sean Porter had the IBF version of the welterweight belt at one point before losing it to Tal Brook. But even with that, I mean, he basically just had that one loss on his record. He was able to get, you know, score wins against Eric Bone. He was able to, you know, score a win against Adrian Broner back in June of 2015. And that he was, you know, there waiting for a shot at Keith Thurman. And it was, you know, basically there in the making after Porter was able to score that win against Adrian Broner, and Thurman, who was the WBA regular champion, was able to go and defend it against excuse me. Having some issues here. Thurman was able to, you know, get their victory against against Palazzo, and then after that, it seemed like the talks about those two fighting each other was ramping up. This is along with what, you know, Thurman was talking about, like, when Floyd Mayweather was kind of, like, bringing up that Mayweather was trying to get Keith Thurman to fight Errol Spence. And Thurman was kind of, like, turning down that fight, saying that he needed about $10 million to fight Errol Spence. So, well, since they kind of like turned that whole thing down or tried to shoot all of that down, they're like, well, why don't you fight Sean Porter? And so they've been trying to get that fight put together for months, They've been saying that Keith Thurman had some type of shoulder injury that he suffered, pretty much from the remnants of that fight in Tampa against Luis Collazo. And then later on, after September, they tried to see if they were having talks to make that fight be done to be held in San Antonio in December, but that plan was shut down. And then there were rumors circulating that Keith Thurman and Sean Porter would be in attendance at the Barclays Center for that fight that Deontay Wilder had against Arturo Spila, and that they were going to announce that the fight was basically official on that night. But we had Sean Porter there, but no one really saw Keith Thurman. But I guess later on in that week, it seemed like it was announced and tickets were on sale to happen there at the Mohegan Sun Casino for March 12th. And so the interest was there. People were waiting for that fight. I mean, they had some other fights there scheduled for it, including an appearance by Chad Dawson, who is basically from that particular area. But then earlier this week, pretty much around Sunday or Monday, we pretty much got the news that Keith Thurman was involved in a minor car accident, and that he suffered injuries from that car accident, and that because of that, the fight between him and Sean Porter is going to be postponed, which garnered a lot of flack from boxing fans, like myself included. Waiting for this fight, had tickets for this fight, so I was looking forward to going. But then with that announcement, saying that particular fight was delayed, and then rumors were circulating around that they were going to still go through with that card while having, somebody else taking the place of the main event and so on and so forth. But later on in the week, pretty much around Wednesday or Thursday, they basically said the fight had been canceled. So now that whole card is canceled, and that announcement, they say that the announcement came through on Thursday. I went on to the Mohegan Sun website earlier this week, and it said that the Bella announced it on Monday that the card was canceled. Either way, bottom line is card is canceled. So we're not going to see Thurman versus Sean Porter on March 12th. I'm very disappointed about that. But it's raised a lot of questions in mind because, number one, once we heard about this car accident that Keith Thurman had, at that point, it seemed like it was instant, but in actuality, it was not. What we ended up finding out later was that that car accident happened in the previous week, and that when he was pretty much checked out at the hospital, he tried to go back into the ring and train and ended up having soreness while training. So with that, he got eventually reevaluated, and then it was basically decided that he could not go forward with training and preparing for the fight against Sean Porter. So now fight is basically scrapped. They have Thurman listed as being out for at least 4 to 6 weeks. And we'll be able to see what happens after that. But with Thurman out for, as they say, 4 to 6 weeks, they say, then that would mean that it'll be 4 to 6 weeks before he's basically cleared for anything. Not a fight, but cleared for anything. So it's 4 to 6 weeks for that. And then another maybe 4 to 6 plus for him to train for any type of fight, no matter who it is. So we'll have to see like what happens in April or even May as the future plans for Keith Thurman. In reference to Sean Porter, we won't really know because Sean Porter has been pretty much on the shelf for 8 months, pretty much up to this point right now. It's been 8 months. It would have been 9 months if the fight took place on March 12th. So with that being known, is Sean Porter and his team going to wait another few months for this particular fight to happen against Keith Thurman, or are they going to move on? I suggest that they are going to move on in that particular case and end up fighting somebody else. He's, you know, still up there in the rankings for a lot of these particular organizations. I mean, he, like I said, I mean, he is there in the WBA. He's also there in the WBO, but we're not necessarily sure how he's going to get into fighting for the WBO championship, as we're going to see what's going to happen with that come next week. But he's, you know, still out there. As the number four contender in the WBA, but with Keith Thurman having the title there, it's unsure of what's going to happen in reference to Thurman and if Porter is going to be able to face him anytime soon. So I advise that Sean Porter move on from that and see if he can fight someone else, see if he can fight an Andre Berto or maybe a Lamont Peterson or somebody within the within the welterweight division, so that, you know, he could get himself active again. Because even though he's a guy that trains, you know, almost 24/7, 365, not being in the ring, actually fighting somebody takes a toll on fighters. With long layoffs. I mean, we've seen what's happened with Andre Ward in this 16-month layoff plus. So we got to see what's going to happen here with Sean Porter, if he's going to be able to get back into the ring anytime soon to fight somebody. So that's one of the big news topics that happened, you know, over the course of the week here in the sport of boxing, as Keith Thurman is basically, you know, bowed out of the fight against Sean Porter due to an injury, which I guess came from complications of whiplash through a car accident that happened on the St. Petersburg, Clearwater area where Thurman was training. So we'll be able to see what happens there in the near future if those two guys will be able to see if they can get another date to have that fight take place, or if Sean Porter moves on to fight someone else. The other, I guess I would say the other notable news story within the sport is the heavyweight division, as we've been looking at what's going to happen with Deontay Wilder and him defending the WBC heavyweight championship against the mandatory contender Alexander Povetkin. You know that Deontay Wilder had won the title around this point last year against Ramon Stavern and has defended it 3 times in 3 voluntary defenses. He had his recent win there against Arthur Spiller, as I said earlier, which was, you know, back in, what, January 16th. And then he had a voluntary defense before that against Johan Duhapas. And then he had another voluntary defense in June of 2015 against Eric Molina. So he had 3 voluntary defenses while waiting on Alexander Povetkin. So now, ever since that particular win against Arthur Spina in January, there were negotiations between Wilder's group and Povetkin's group to see if they could get some things ironed out to get the fight to happen. There were things floating around that Wilder was reluctant to have the fight done in Russia, but even with that, it said that Povetkin also was, but Povetkin himself was open to fighting in the States. So it's it wasn't really that those two parties had an issue having a fight in the States, but it seemed like a particular date for the fight wasn't necessarily agreed to, and maybe some other miscellaneous things that haven't been disclosed as of yet, but the WBC was looking for them to have a deal done before Friday. And if they couldn't have it done before Friday, then it would go up for first bid. But that wasn't the case. There was no contract made before Friday, so it went up to first bid, and it was pretty much a one-on-one first bid there between Lou DiBella and DiBella Entertainment and Povetkin's promoter there, Ryabisky. And with DiBella, DiBella was able to bid for 5.1, pretty much around 5.1 to $5.2 million, but ended up losing that bid to Ryabisky, as Ryabisky was able to bid for about $7.1 million. So Andre Ryabisky's group, who was World of Boxing, he basically, you know, secures the rights to promote the title fight between Deontay Wilder and Alexander Povetkin, as here through the article by Jake Donovan and Boxing Scene that World of Boxing was able to put in a bid of $7.15 million in Miami, Florida, which beat out Bella Entertainment, who put in a bid of, you know, just a shade over $5.1 million. So what's going to happen now is that you're going to have this fight between Wilder and Povetkin, with Wilder basically getting 70% of the purse after 10% of it is out for escrow, being available to the winner. But 90% of that $7.15 million is going to be split 70-30 in favor of Wilder. So Wilder is going to make around $4.5 million for the fight, while Povetkin would make $1.9 or nearly $2 million for the fight, and whoever wins gets an additional $715,000. But That being known, now the two big questions in reference to the fight, this fight are, when is it going to be and where is it going to be? Like I was saying earlier, Wilder is kind of reluctant to have this particular fight in Russia. And that Povetkin didn't mind having it at the Barclays Center or anywhere in the United States, but with World of Boxing getting this, getting the win for the purse bid, they have about 15 days to turn in contracts to the World Boxing Council with a date and a place for the championship fight. And that it has to, the fight has to take place by May 26th of this year. We'll be able to see here within the next 3 months when this fight is going to take place, where it's going to, I mean, when the fight is going to take place, but we won't find out until, you know, within the span of 2 weeks, where it's going to be. But now, we'll see what's going to happen with that. I think that with it being in purse bid, I kind of like expected this, the purse winning bid to be around $10 million, as I think with World of Boxing, Ray Abisky is a had been notable for getting the title fight between Alexander Povetkin and Vladimir Klitschko in a bid where they posted 23.3 million dollars to secure the rights for that particular fight between Povetkin and Vladimir Klitschko. But here he didn't even put up $10 million for this fight, and I think it was kind of because, one, they knew that they were going to win the bid, and two, that they, I believe that they felt that DiBella may or may not have had the particular funds to put that much money up to try and win that bid for the promotion, for the rights to promote the fight. So, with that being known, we have World of Boxing be the guys that will promote the WBC title fight between Deontay Wilder and Alexander Povetkin. But now, it's only a matter of time before we find out the additional details of this fight and where it will take place. So just be on the lookout for that. So on that note, we're pretty much going to wind down with the show. Just a quick news edition. We'll be going over to the fight card at the DC Armory next week. So we will be there to cover that card, which has a main event of Luis King Kong Ortiz versus Tony Thompson for interim WBA heavyweight championship. And also it will have Jesse Vargas going up against Saddam Ali for the WBO welterweight championship. So we will be there at that particular venue. So check us out pretty much on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook to look for updates and additional news for that particular fight card, as we're going to post updates as they come along during that during that card. So look for us next week there on Saturday, and then a full synopsis of that card on the next version of the Boxing Source Radio Show. And in addition, I'll see if I'll be on the lookout for the results that will be out there in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, as we'll have a few fights going on over there in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, including Julian G. Rock Williams on that card. So be on the lookout for that. So on that note, close out here on the show. Check out our sister shows. Remember, every Tuesday night, Cohort Truth on Sports, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And then Wednesday nights, we have the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show, Wednesday nights at 8:30 p.m. There may or may not be a show on Wednesday because pretty much have closed out the football season and just going through a little lull here, even though there is, the combine that pretty much happened over the past week. So just be on the lookout for any updates through the CHGM Sports website, the CHGMSports.com, and our social networking pages that we have on Facebook, the CHGM Sports, CMC Firestorm Football Talk Show, and, of course, the Boxing Source also. So just look out for all of that. So with that, I am out on this. Remember, the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to stand and trade. Have a good evening.